Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the Bus Factor. So that was one already. Not that one. Bus count. One. So welcome to the Bus Factor. We don't have Stephen in the chat, might work. Instead of Stephen, we've got my father, Peter.
Hello, everyone.
Special guest, I guess. You were here for the second or third show, fourth?
It was a while back.
Yeah.
It must have been some months. And you seem to be doing this for quite a while now.
Yeah, this is episode 21, I believe it is. So we've been doing this too long, maybe. I should send a tweet out saying that we're live. Yeah, so Stephen's currently on a cruise around Australia.
Long way around Australia.
I don't actually know where he's going. I think he just left Sydney. Ah, he's going to Vanuatu. Oh, yeah. Like, so he might be pretty sick.
Now, my wife and I went on a boat to Vanuatu. She loved it. Coral and swimming.
Oh, I suppose you didn't swim too much.
One of the few photographs of me in the water.
Oh, is that the one when you were courting her, so you pretended you like swimming?
No, this was only 2 years ago.
Ah, fair enough. Yeah, so this is the Bus Factor, and you just walked down, didn't you?
I just walked down. I didn't trust to the buzzer.
Yeah, you looked a bit flustered. We've got a few stories about buses, and as usual, we've got a little whiteboard saying what we talk about now. We got some infosec stuff. And you had some topics you also wanted to talk about, but you left your notes behind.
Yes, they weren't very extensive notes. They were just sort of bullet points, really.
Well, that's the best type of notes.
And the two I made were...
I think there was one
just there.
It was
relevant to Bitcoin and some security issues.
Oh, the replay is broken.
For the life of me, I can't remember the...
The
other topic, but it'll come to me.
So Bitcoin, you reckon?
Yes, it appears that that one of the exchanges had all of... They were an exchange to house things for miners, and... it appears they lost the lot, and it was quoted at the daily rate of being $3 million, I suppose. But it seemed like 47,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's gone back up.
But the interesting part of that, and it's just the reports that I read, the interesting part was that it was an InfoSec issue, and that it was social engineering that got them passwords that hackers managed to extract all them.
Yeah. Well, if people reuse passwords, that's what's going to happen. It sounded like they didn't really have that good security, just to be honest.
Well, they probably needed professional advice.
It amazes me. So we haven't really had too many Bitcoin exchanges do this sort of thing, but it amazes me that people that hold this much money have such terrible security.
But generally, these are people that are not haven't come from a banking background. They're basically what you might call computer geeks.
Yeah, they're basically developers that thought they could make a quick buck and ended up making a very large quick buck. We got someone in the chat. So yeah, this that's the wrong one there. We've got a few changes since last time you were here, as you would have noticed. Different location.
Slightly different location.
Same camera location. And we've got a big, nice chat window you can see.
And one of the changes, of course, since I was last here, of course, is not one that you've, but the fact that we are now on daylight savings and it's the middle of summer here in the Southern Hemisphere. So there's bright sunshine.
Yeah, it is quite
in the middle
bright.
Of winter, this time it's starting to get dark.
Yeah. What's Skynet? Skynet is a internet cafe, I believe. It's also where the world gets taken over. Oh, yeah. Dad, you need to hold the microphone like vertical. People can't hear you.
Horizontal, you mean?
Horizontal, yeah. People can't hear you. Yeah, you were actually requested to be on the show, you know.
Yeah, that surprised me.
Yeah. Someone, I believe it was Liam, said we would like your dad back on.
The thing is, I come from a different background. I'm not an InfoSec developer, but I've had an involvement in computing for an awful long time. At this stage, about 50 years.
Yeah, that is what you have done.
But I don't have the detail knowledge of what the current philosophies are.
Oh, they change all the time. That's the problem.
Well, that's what I figured. They change, right. And I can always pick up the latest thing if I need to, but the flavour of the month will be different next week.
Yeah, because you do quite a lot of reading to try and keep up with the times as well, which is more than what most non-InfoSec people would do.
That wouldn't be true, but in every profession, you never stop learning. Never stop learning.
Yep. You never stop learning. Yeah. So you wanted to talk about Bitcoin. We've been talking about Bitcoin a bit in the office today because it's quite high.
Not just in the office. I listen to the national radio, which is probably, you're probably all a different demographic than people that listen to the national program.
If you think so, yeah.
But even on the national program, which is slightly conservative in some ways, they've been talking about Bitcoin. And the comments made that it's sort of it's caught attention because it has zoomed up in value, if you can value such things.
Yeah,
and that's the crux of it, I think, is it's a willing buyer, willing seller, and at the moment there are many willing buyers.
There's quite a few. Yeah, I'm amazed that, like, even in New Zealand it's quite a large market.
But are there exchanges here in New Zealand?
Yeah, there's a few exchanges. I noticed one exchange isn't actually accepting bank deposits because the banks didn't like what they were doing. But there's definitely others that I use and make quite a bit.
And so, but it's probably easier to exchange into US funds, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of exchanges that will get you into US dollars, but then it's harder for me to spend US dollars. Yeah.
But you can then transfer them via banks.
Yeah, but then there's a lot more fees.
Yeah. That was the other thing about Bitcoin and the comments being made, is the transaction costs were quite high, and it was quoted that a transaction cost of $20, which basically meant that you couldn't use, it wasn't effectively something you could use for your day-to-day spending.
Yeah, so that's kind of partly due to the price of Bitcoin going up ridiculous amount. So it's currently worth like 25,000 New Zealand dollars for one Bitcoin, whereas this time last year it was like 3,000.
And sadly, I don't have any.
Don't you?
Although I suspect if I had some, I would be selling them.
What do you think now's the time to sell?
It's a matter of of risk profiles, some people are prepared to accept a high level of risk because things that go up can also go down.
Mm. Definitely. I mean, it kind of seems like it's in a bubble, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going up very quickly. So it's probably kind of pop and go back down.
Yeah. And the other comment about Bitcoin that I read was that, what was it? One of the game manufacturers was no longer accepting Bitcoin.
There we go.
And that's one, a red light, two. Is it?
So that's two buses. Bus count. Already up to four. We're only quarter past and we've already hit four buses.
Yeah. So this game manufacturer was no longer accepting Bitcoin, and the quoted reason was the volatility, that it goes up and down, and therefore it presents to them as a vendor too high a risk.
Yeah.
And the transaction costs being high was also a penalty. And I guess in terms of a currency, which is often quoted as, it's only useful if you can make use of it.
Yeah.
And if you can buy things.
I mean, you wouldn't quote a dozen eggs in Bitcoin because what's it going to be worth tomorrow?
But I recollect, Hugh, that you had a go at living off Bitcoin for a while.
Yeah, that actually came up in the chat window there. People wanted to hear about me living off Bitcoin.
So it was viable when you did it, was it?
I wouldn't call it viable. I managed to buy some things.
I understood most of it was beer.
Yeah, there was a lot of beer. There was some wine. There was some mead. I think that's all the alcohol I got. A lot of pub food, so burgers and greasy chips and stuff like that. Bought a smoothie once in Sydney.
But was there anything of use?
I could survive. Bought some black scones and some gingerbread. Scones were pretty bad.
Was this because they couldn't otherwise get rid of them?
I think they were doing it just as a joke because I'd made it a month. People on the internet didn't like the fact that I did this because I apparently cheated because I fed my cat. And I thought the cat shouldn't suffer. But yeah, the cat was not on the Bitcoin program.
Well, you could have actually prepaid all the cat food.
I could have, but then people were also saying it was a bit naughty that I had pre-bought food. I should have started with an empty fridge and...
Or finished with the same contents in the fridge.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I tried pretty hard, and I think I did a good effort. I'm not sure I'd do it again. As you say, it's difficult to do day-to-day spending.
Yeah, and that when was that? That was about 4 years ago.
Yeah, four, maybe 5 years ago. Yeah. I think 4 years ago.
Yeah, and thus the value of a single Bitcoin was moderate at that stage.
Yeah, I think back then it was worth 1,000, whereas now it's worth like 25,000. I mean, even last year it was worth like 3,000, and then this year it's worth 25.
So you could live on a Bitcoin for one month at that stage, a single Bitcoin?
I think it was close to a single Bitcoin that I got. I think it was like 0.9. I went to my mate and gave him, I think it was $1,000 in cash. Felt really dodge. And then he gave me some Bitcoin. And yeah. Yeah, so it would have been around one Bitcoin because I gave him $1,000. That lasted most of the month.
And if you'd kept it?
If I kept it, it would be worth.
But you wouldn't have got the beer and the 25. Black scones?
No, I wouldn't have. And I think that was the important thing. I lived for the moment and I had fun. And that's what really matters.
So is this a slow buzz day? Not many buzzes out there. Or is this a reflection on daylight savings and the fact that people are out and about more than they are in the middle of winter?
Hard to know. We kind of so there's no trolley buses, you might notice. He's leaving. Yeah, there's no trolley buses at the moment. And it's summer. Tats has gone to talk to my boss about wine. Priorities. Oh, he's got some wine. He's procured some wine. So it's some homebrew. My boss wanted some homebrew wine, and he's now getting some wine. there's like lots of chat. Maiden, please. So Stephen is on a cruise going to Vanuatu on the cruise ship that had like lots of gastro bugs, and like he's probably going to get sick. So instead, it's me and my dad.
I'm back now.
He's back.
So what else is on the list?
We've got a few things. So last week, we were talking about strikes. Because in Wellington, we've had a bus strike recently. And then last week, we had a train strike and a bus stop union meeting. And we're going to have another train strike within like a 2-week period, which is interesting that they are striking so close together.
Is the train strike here in Wellington? I thought it was in Auckland.
Well, there was one that was meant to be last Friday, but the police kind of stepped in and said, we would prefer if you didn't do it on a Friday because otherwise we'll have lots of drunk drivers. But now Auckland's got a train strike today. So I guess the cops didn't get their say up there.
And again, on the national program, which is what I listen to,
yeah,
as I work, there were comments made by people who said, well, the traffic wasn't as bad as they imagined. But also they were slightly disappointed because they usually had drinks on Friday night and it was going to...
interfere.
It was going to limit them.
Yeah, I can understand that. But yeah, so the Auckland trains are on strike. I don't really know too much more details apart from that. The Wellington ones will probably go on strike again because the company just doesn't care. So they went on strike to keep their same income because the new company's basically...
I thought the Wellington bus operation had just been taken over by another operator.
Yeah, so it's been taken over by a French company, I think.
So is this the union and the operators sort of making a stance?
Yeah,
facing off to each other.
So the new company, they came on and they're offering. Oh, that's quite a red light.
He doesn't get a green arrow, does he?
No, they don't get green arrows. The buses tend to just let them go.
But he obviously saw an opportunity.
People want to know if you spend as much time as me complaining about various government entities and transport operators.
No, I don't spend any time grumbling about transport operators.
Yeah, I think I got that off my mum. She complained a lot. In good ways, I should say. She knew the council very well.
But there was many other things that she fought against the council doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got... I actually sent Metlink, Metlink that control the trains and the buses around Wellington, I sent them an email explaining the bus factor to them, because just yesterday when I was coming into work, I saw some photos. And that's green, orange, or amber for Liam. Ah, that's nothing. So just yesterday, where are we? B-roll. We'll flick back to real time video. So yeah, I sent Metlink an email saying we've been watching buses at this intersection running red lights for like four months maybe. A long time. Too long maybe. Oh, is the audio gone? We're getting a check in the office, audio check. Audio went when I was on the B-roll. Yeah, sorry about that. In the montage, so we had three photos. So the first one, I came into work in the morning, saw a bunch of buses blocking the intersection. The second photo was showing all the cars that couldn't get through on a green light for them. And then I walked upstairs to the office, looked out the window, and yet even more buses were stopped. So I then told Metlink an email and told them that we've been running this bus factor for a couple of months now, or like 3, maybe 4 months. And they were like, oh, yeah. I mentioned it's the same intersection that someone got struck down on, the pedestrian versus bus, 2 weeks ago. And over this last few years, it's happened quite a lot. And they have shown interest, but it appears they haven't given the bus drivers knowledge about this, because we're up to 5 buses already. There must be a turner. Or nothing? Nah. Slow bus day. Hard to know. Got some comments in the background.
On your list, I was just looking there. There's a whole lot there that you've still got to work your way through.
Yeah, we haven't actually talked about much but InfoSec stuff.
An InfoSec thing that was on my list, the other one,
yeah,
was the Intel management engine and some associated things that they've just posted sort of bugs. Bug reports or vulnerability reports, and this has a serious concern for many in the computer.
I think this is what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago.
Was it? No, I didn't.
Did you not tune in?
Well, I'm a slow reader.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing because you can do quite a bit with it.
Maybe the article I read has just come up because they actually filed the paper. Oh, sorry, it was because there was a Black Hat conference that some details were released at just this last week.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the problem with news that sometimes comes out kind of delayed. But yeah, we could go on and talk about something else. One thing I will mention is, so in the last week, something's come up on site called Patreon, which is what we use here at the Bus Factor to get our resources. So if you want to support us, go to www.patreon.com/thebusfactor.
Are they safe?
I assume so. Who knows? But the thing they've done recently, well, they haven't rolled it out yet, but they're planning on rolling out a new fee structure where instead of charging the fees to the creators, such as the Bus Factor, they're now charging the fees to the patrons,
to the donors.
Yeah, the people that are giving you the money. So we have a structure where we allow people to donate $1 per episode, and when they pay that dollar, they have to pay an extra 35 cents on top, which is a bit different. And so some donors are having to cut back on who they're donating to because now they're having to spend more money, which I think is a bit shit, but who knows? That's probably that for Patreon. We've still got our one patron.
This way of working and charging isn't that unusual. Many years ago, auctioneers for general auctions used to charge the seller. So basically, the buyer who was bidding at an auction, and you may recollect your mother went along to a lot of auctions and purchased a lot of things.
I got some absinthe. From one of them.
Yeah, yeah. But what...
Lovely French absinthe.
Mm. Yeah. Complete with worms, was it?
It was terrible.
But anyway, the auctioneers, when you bid $1 or $10 or whatever it was for your thing that you were trying to buy, that is what you paid. And the seller paid the auctioneer's fee.
Yeah.
But they introduced what they called a buyer premium. And the buyer premium meant that the buyer also paid a partial fee. So they collected it on both sides of the transaction.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you bid your $10, you might end up paying $11 because, you know, the auctioneer collected a bit. But he also collected a bit. So the vendor, when you bid $10, didn't get $10. They only got, say, $9.
Yeah.
And the auctioneer basically, it's not quite double dipping, but it was trying to share the cost. But your age structure probably don't remember the fact that we used to have pounds, shillings, and pence. And one of
them. Don't believe I do remember those times.
And there was this sort of magical thing called a guinea, and this was a pound and a shilling. And a pound and a shilling was the fee for to fund the transaction. So you bought something in pounds.
Oh, we've got some cars blocking.
But you paid for it in guineas.
Oh, man, we got some cars blocking the intersection. The buses are having to... Go around them. We can't. Might be able to just squeeze. Yeah. No idea if that's John. Bit of a different angle. But yeah, there were some cars blocking the intersection. The buses had to go around. Interesting. How many guineas did you have?
I never had guinea. Wasn't a. I don't think there was an actual coin. Or there might have been a coin, which is a guinea, but it was basically a pound and a shilling, 21 shillings.
Yeah.
I don't think they were really used in New Zealand. This is more a UK, a British thing.
Yeah, I can imagine. Probably as best as I can get the camera for now. Yeah, old time currencies. What should we talk about? We've got a few things.
DNS backups. What was that comment?
So DNS backups. So the DNS is looked after by an organization, ICANN, and it's mainly operated out of the US. And some countries have not liked this, namely China and Russia, because they have less control. We'll just make the replay there. I think, oh no, orange, nah, it's good. DNS backups, yeah, so China and Russia didn't like the lack of control they had and the majority of the control that US had. So Russia is now starting up a backup DNS, so it's going to basically back up the root domain to take less control out of the US. And the US have moved it into a NGO to give a bit less control to them and more control to the NGO. But Russia and China would prefer it if it goes to something UN controlled, because then they have actually input into it.
But the DNS backup, sorry, the DNS sort of data set, or the root data set,
yeah,
can't be very huge. I mean, we're not talking about a serious problem of backing it up, but it's not so much backup, but it's control, surely. Backing it up doesn't control it.
Backing up, no, it doesn't control it. They might use it for censorship, I'm not too sure.
They can't override it, can they? Or is it possible to override it in their own jurisdiction?
Sorry, I was just typing. Yeah, they can probably override it in their local.
Because I'm aware that when
similar to like the Great Firewall of China,
That they can control and they can say you are or you're not allowed to access these things, and it's done through the DNS, isn't it?
Yeah, so if you control the DNS, you basically control where people are going, because unless people remember IP numbers, which people just aren't, everything goes through the DNS and you can say where things are. But it
does devolve down to local nodes on the DNS, doesn't it? The root DNS just gives you the starting point.
Well, the root DNS could resolve the whole thing for you, and your client probably wouldn't know the difference.
Oh, I appreciate that the general bod would not know the difference.
Yeah.
But I presume if a rogue country, so to speak, overrode or could override the root DNS, they could point to another local one.
Yeah.
And therefore the hierarchy, you know, they can serve up a whole different pages than and that's a common exploit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And isn't that the way that was it Egypt or Syria or somewhere control things?
Can't recall which one it was, but yeah, like if you can control the DNS, you can control everything, which is why things like DNSSEC and DANE are useful tools, because they allow you to verify DNS requests valid.
But the whole point of the DNS system is that it's distributed, that no one.
Yeah, exactly.
No one organization has complete control.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting what happens there.
Certainly a slow bus day.
It is quite a slow bus. We're only up to 5. There was one that was close before. I guess instead of buses, we could talk about cows.
I've heard this word cow before, and it's an acronym, isn't it?
Used in this circumstance, yes. So we're talking about Dirty Cow. So this is a Linux kernel bug back in 2016, if we can remember that far back.
That was only last year.
Oh, was it only last year? So CAL stands for copy on write. So it's, yeah. I mean, dirty CAL was a thing. It got fixed. But recently, it's come out that that fix for dirty CAL didn't actually fix it as well as it could. And so now we've got a variant on dirty CAL called huge dirty CAL. And it's basically manipulating the huge page tables of the memory mapping, blah. So it's a bit harder to exploit. And the number of targets is a bit less, but it still affects quite a lot of things, namely like anything Ubuntu. So yeah, it still affects quite a bit, but it's a bit harder to exploit. But I just thought I'd bring it up because we had a reasonably serious kernel bug and it got fixed, but not properly.
So this is down at the machine level, is it?
Well, down at the kernel level. So I guess it's reasonably close to the machine. So it's not like the as close to the machine as the Intel management chips that you were talking about earlier.
So how does this affect the average user?
The average user probably doesn't care if they get hacked or even know, but the average user probably won't be running Linux either. But it means that if someone gets a shell account on your Linux box, they can reasonably easily escalate to root privileges from a low user.
So even if they're just a common user, so to speak, you know, without any elevated privileges,
yep,
they can effectively run some sort of script, even if they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah,
and achieve some sort of penetration into it.
Yeah, it's sort of the gist in it, which is kind of bad. But yeah, it's been fixed now, so.
So if I keep things up to date, I shouldn't have anything to fear.
Well, I guess, but I mean, so dirty CAL was around since 2012, and it just wasn't found until 2016. So people might have been exploiting it, and people potentially might have been exploiting this huge dirty CAL. But in general, if you keep your patches up to date, it's probably good. Yeah. Oh, I have another photo I could probably get. No, it's too hard to live demo that. The story I was going to think of is another one up in Auckland with the buses. The other day, someone took a photo of a bus driver that was just asleep at the wheel with the engine running. The bus wasn't moving.
So they weren't actually driving while they were asleep.
Well, technically they were in control of the vehicle because the keys were in the motor was running. Technically that means they're in control of the vehicle. I've known people that have been done for that in other circumstances. But yeah, they were fast asleep for about half an hour, like someone was taking photos of them, then
But it was parked. It was just the motor was running to keep them warm, was it?
It was parked and blocking the roadway by the sounds of it.
Not across an intersection with a traffic light, though, was it?
Potentially was. I'd love it if it was, but it probably wasn't. But yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of Auckland bus newsers. We might need to do a Auckland bus factor special sometime. Have to talk to Stephen and organise that. Yeah, how's the time? You got 20 minutes? Oh, we're doing reasonably well for time.
Yeah. So on your list here, I don't understand, under the buzz listing, you've got these SMB plugin.
Oh, we're not talking about that.
They're all different things.
Yeah, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
My dad found the secret whiteboard showing all the client details that we work on.
So, Mailsploit.
Mailsploit, yeah. So, this is an interesting thing. So, mail servers get used for spam quite a lot. And so there's a few mechanisms.
I've noticed that lately.
Yeah. A few mechanisms have been created to kind of stop the spam problem. So a few like SKP, SPF, no, that's the sunscreen one, SPK, one of those ones.
They're all acronyms.
Oh, they're all acronyms. I was talking about this in work today. Like, there's too many acronyms. So this is a tool that allows you to say the only things that should be coming from my domain should be coming from these servers, and you can list a bunch of IPs or just say it should be coming from my MX record. That's a highly overview of it. So that's that one. You can also get DKIM, which you can sign a request saying this did come from my server. You can also get one. No more buses. Oh, no, that's cars. So you can get one that you have to sign a request saying came from my server. So there's a bunch of protocols on top of email to let receiving servers know whether it's legitimate or not. So this Mailsploit, you can send an email from someone. So in your from header, you'll say, this is coming from, I don't know, POTUS at mil dot, whatever the President Trump's email is. The point is, you can send it from anyone's email, and then after their email, you put in some special Unicode characters, and then you write your valid spam email that you're sending from. The email server, it will receive this, and it'll be like, yeah, that looks fine. It's coming from where it says it's coming from. It's coming from, like, imspammingyou.com. And then it goes through to the user's email. And when they look at the email, they just see the first part of the message. They don't see anything after the special Unicode character. So to them, it looks like...
So that's like a not a delete character, but ignore what follows.
Yeah, it's pretty much. But it's interesting because the client only sees the first part, whereas the server sees the second part. And there's different levels of verification going here because the client's verifying, okay, that came from my friend Bill. Whereas the server's like, oh, yeah, that's coming from hacker one or whatever. Oh, not hacker one, hacker not a company. And it lets people just bypass the general security and get through to the users and opens up for a lot of phishing attacks.
Is this what sort of like the same as what they call spoofing emails?
Yeah, so this is just spoofing emails, but it's spoofing in a way that it looks like it's not spoofed. Like, it'll look legit to the mail server and it'll look legit to the client. So it will just look legit the whole way around.
But just to go back to acronyms and jargon, you've got these things called... I mean, the problem for me is because I don't work in this mainstream line, a lot of it is a bit double Dutch to me. So you've got mail user agents, which is what the end user sort of looks at.
Yeah, like an email like client.
Typically Outlook for many, many people, but so not Outlook. For the wise ones.
I don't know, a lot of people use Outlook.
There might be others, but then you've got the mail transport agents, and the mail transport agents are the ones that deal with these details.
Yeah. Well, here both the mail user agent, they're the ones looking at the first part of the string, and the MTAs, like postfix or XM, they're looking at the second part of the string. So they're both doing some part, but the MTAs are doing the heavy lifting of doing the digital verification.
Someone who doesn't mean well can sort of hand edit or have a script which does the appropriate thing and corrupts these to some extent.
Yeah, exactly.
And the mail transport agents aren't smart enough to get around them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do the job that they're meant to do, and
they just send it on.
Yeah. And that seems to work.
Yeah. So spam is a problem. I mean, it was a problem 10 years ago. Why are we slow in resolving this issue?
Why? There's a lot of issues that have been around for a long time that we don't really have a solution to. Spam is one of them. How do you solve it? Passwords is another thing. How do you solve that?
And that's a topic for a whole new episode.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, spam, it's difficult to solve because how do you know whether something's legitimate or not? There's a lot of tools to do it, but they all do it reasonably shit.
But we read a lot about AI and artificial intelligence, and this is the cure for all things.
Oh, it's the cure, but how many false positives and false negatives does it have?
I've always held, while I've done some research using AI, and this has gone on for 20 years or something that I've been doing this, and the issue becomes there's nothing like a human brain and a human pair of eyes to look at things. But we're very, very slow in terms of analyzing things.
Oh, definitely.
But we spot things that we don't like.
Yeah. Well, we're good at patterns, and we'll think something's bad, even if it's not bad. We get a gut feeling sometimes, I guess.
So another article I read recently was a comment that within the next 20 years or something, that AI will do most of the computer programming, the coding, and humans won't actually be doing it.
Yeah, potentially. Who knows? I mean, you'll probably still have some humans driving some parts of it, because there's still a creative element into developing something. I'm not sure AI can ever take over the creativity of things.
But what happens if they do? I mean, aren't we facing this with motor vehicles? Aren't they going to become self-driving?
Yeah, but what's the creativity in driving?
Oh, it's very creative when you come to an intersection and there's something across it.
I would say you've
got to learn to stop.
Yeah, but like an AI would just know what to happen because they'll be talking to all the other things. And
wasn't there a case
of
some vehicle where a truck went across an intersection and the car on autopilot, so to speak, just went under, well, sort of didn't actually make it under the truck, but
I don't think I saw this.
Lower part of the truck of the vehicle made it under the truck.
Yeah, so the head part didn't.
That's the gist of it.
That would be a rough way to go.
But that was a few years ago in the States.
Yeah, we don't often see many trucks around here.
I did. On the national program, which I listened to, there was a comment within the last week about motor vehicles and self-driving vehicles, that they would be not quickly brought into use in New Zealand. And part of that is because of our road network, I would imagine, and the fact that we've got relatively small cities, and you've got to tailor these self-driving vehicles to each city rather than to general road conditions.
Yeah.
So I imagine that within the UK and the United States, that self-driving vehicles will become more prevalent there before they ever become available in New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand's been guinea pigs on some things, but majority of the time, we're not a guinea pig. One example is we were the guinea pigs on the EFTOLS system. got started and, here.
And we did very well.
Yeah. Like, you still sometimes go to, say, Australia and you get, like, minimum fees that, or minimum payments that you have to pay, and some places still just don't accept EFTPOS, and you're like, yeah, what country am I living in?
I recollect going to Japan in after an earthquake, 1994 it was.
Yeah.
And so it was early 1995 that I went there, and they were still very much a cash economy.
Yeah.
And my credit card really didn't work. I mean, that was the essence of it, and that I had to carry all these yen around. And,
yeah.
And you would think, it seemed quite ironical that here was a society which was highly technological, but their banking system wasn't up to what I was used to here in New Zealand. And,
yeah.
And part of that comes from the 1960s here in New Zealand, where the banks cooperated in terms of getting a common clearance system,
yeah,
and having it automated so that, in fact, it just worked.
Mm.
And you look at the likes of the UK or the United States, and far bigger communities, but they just weren't getting up to the sort of the efficiencies that we could achieve in New Zealand, because we had a much lower population and we could just do it.
Yeah, I mean, smaller populations does allow for a bit more experimentation, I guess, where you're not pissing off too many people. I suppose that's a good way to put it. Well, there's not many buses, is there?
It's a very slow bus day. So why do you get me here along on slow bus days?
Oh, I don't know. It's normally pretty good. I mean, you watch the show. We've had 5. Yeah, I don't know why it's slow whenever you're here. Maybe they know. What have we got? 5 minutes left. One thing I was going to talk about is GitHub. I think Stephen mentioned it a couple weeks ago about dependency graph. So they're bringing out a feature where you've got a project hosted on GitHub, and now you can, like, look at a graph of all the dependencies that your project requires and whether any of them have vulnerable versions, which I think is amazing, because now, like, in a nice, easy place, you can see what things need updating. I don't know, just food for thought.
Well, GitHub is one of these things that has taken over in terms of developers, isn't it? Were the sort of things that operated before GitHub arrived?
So there were other content management systems. Well, I mean, back in the day, there was like CVS, and SourceForge was quite a popular repository.
But
I guess.
They're public ones, and CVS wasn't a public one. It was one that you operated yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, but you can still push it to a public
A public one. But as a programmer, you know, 50 years ago, I just had to punch my own paper tapes.
Yeah.
Or punch cards, or, you know, eventually magnetic tapes and floppy disks and the like.
Yeah.
And I had to manage the source myself, and I had no facilities like this. And if I dropped a deck of cards, well, that was sad. Now, presumably, people don't know this anymore, but GitHub seems to be the way. How do people like me get into this?
You go to github.com and you sign up for an account.
But I have to read a lot.
Ah, it's pretty easy to sign up. What you do after you sign up is up to you, though.
Yeah. But isn't it then accessible to everybody?
You can get private repositories. And there's other services that also allow you to host code, and some of it can be private, some of it can be public.
While I'm a great supporter of open source, and I have no issue with open source, and I have no trouble giving what I do away, but I don't believe that much of it has got a wide following.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, while anyone can access it, I have no problem with that. It seems overkill in many ways to make it, to broadcast it, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, open source does have...
Now, I will remind you, Hugh,
yeah,
that you didn't play your music at the beginning.
I did indeed.
Did you? I didn't hear it.
It's because it only comes through here. Doesn't play out loud, otherwise you get mic feedback.
Yeah.
I'll be playing it in a few minutes as well. That's an orange. Oh, it sounded like there was another one coming. Yeah, old Pierlo Vingabus is the music we play.
And I've heard it before when I'm listening at the other end.
Yeah, that's a good song. Do you think we should check it out now?
Well, it's as good a time as any.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.